Most American, live from the G&B Show Studios. This is your Ghost Benedict and her show.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only, mystifying Oracle of Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Demon Hunter!
That would be me, sir. I am here.
You are here, and you sound great. Welcome back, Shadow Nation. It's Sunday night once again. Hold on to your hats. We got another great episode for you tonight. And I hope it all goes out without a snitch. Without a niche. Glitch.
Oh, yeah, wouldn't that be something?
It'd be amazing. It would be amazing. We got a little bit of a late start tonight, guys, so we apologize for that. Sometimes in live broadcast, you do have things come up, and we shall overcome. Isn't that what you're supposed to say?
Yeah, sure. That's the ticket.
Well, I tell you what, Demon Hunter, we better go ahead and get into the guest since we're short on time. What do you think about that?
Oh my gosh, it's like we're not even us anymore.
I know it. We're throwing off the whole game plan. Without further ado, Shadow Nation listeners around the world, tonight's guest. Author of the books, The Fierce Unforgiving Muse, Shrunken Heads, Bugs, and also a writer for Star Trek Voyager, the hit sci-fi thriller. Tonight, Gregory L. Norris stops by the studio, guys. He's going to tell us the inside scoop on how it feels to write screenplays, scripts for Star Trek Voyager, and epic, soon-to-be-epic novels like The Fierce and Unforgiving Muse, which is kind of like Edgar Allan Poe meets Frankenstein here. All that and much, much more tonight with author, writer, Gregory L. Norris. Yes. Gregory L. Norris, Demon Hunter. Stops by the studio. Yeah, good friend of yours, I hear. Right?
Never met the man.
Never met the man. Well, I bet that sometimes that's the best friends. You know? Every once
you should know by now I don't have friends, Sean.
Hey, I was telling you this week, I was on the
Let me guess, we're getting that same problem we were getting before.
Yeah, we are. We're having little audio issues there, and of course, this would this would be the night for that, right?
Of course it is. That's, you know, because folks, tonight is the first night you're hearing us on Action Audio.
Woo! Action Audio apps, right?
Action Audio apps, and let me point out right off the bat that any failures in the sound have nothing to do with Action Audio this evening. It is completely the fact that our internet has been giving us an issue this evening and doesn't want to give up the ghost.
Yeah, never does happen. But anyway, you bring up a good point. Special thanks to our new home, one of our new homes, Action Audio Apps. Guys, be sure to check those out. You can catch them live at all the NFL games. Be sure to tune in. You can get inside the huddle. They also cover basketball, boxing events. If it's a sporting event, Action Audio Apps is there. Just get online and check them out. Special thanks to 102.7 FM, The Hog, Planet Paranormal, Stitcher, Smart Radio, and all our carriers around the world. Thank you.
You know, I'm trying to control the sound here as much as I can, Sean, and it's making me forget which button to push. It's
the hog button.
There's too many buttons.
There is too many buttons. 102.3 or 102.7 FM, the hog. There you go. I got the button for you. Oh, anyway, I was telling you, Nathan and I, we worked the late shift, the graveyard shift, if you will. It's kind of fits our show anyway. But we get home, we spend a lot of late nights doing research for the show and things like that. And last night, I was kind of stumped on things to talk about today. And Nathan and I were talking a little bit during the day. And when we get off the phone, I checked out something on YouTube. I was surfing around. A lot of you people might like to do that when you're online. Just go to YouTube and you watch a lot of things that remind you of the old days when you were kids, ABC Weekend Specials, stuff like that. Anyway, Nathan, I stumbled across It was a Mysteries and Tragedies. It was an old show from the 80s, early 80s, that or maybe mid 80s, I don't know. But it covered something called Our Gang. There was an episode, and it said the horrible fate of Alfalfa. Yeah, Alfalfa, believe it or not. The Little Rascals, everybody loves them, right? I grew up on the Little Rascals. I know you did. They had the dog with the little circle around the eye, and you had all these kids doing their hijinks and all these funny things on the street, playing around, having fun. And you had Spanky, Alfalfa, Buckwheat, Otay, right? You had all these different people, and they would go around these kids, and they'd get into all kind of mischief and try not to get beat up by bullies and stuff like that. So I used to come in. Of course, I didn't see it in the first run because I think it ended in like 1930 or something like that. I don't know, maybe early 1940s. But I remember watching it on the four channels we had back in the late 70s, early 80s, man. You know, the pool model, floor model, pool knob, Zenith television, where the clicker actually clicked. Click, 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 click. Anyway, I started watching this to see Alfalfa. I was thinking Alfalfa, the kid with the hair up in the back. You remember him, right, Demon Hunter?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, had the three freckles on both sides of his cheeks, and he had the piece of hair that would stand up in the back.
And I worked long and hard to try and get my hair to do that.
You thought that was a ladies' man look, did you?
I thought that was the look, man.
Alfalfa and Buckwheat. Like Buckwheat or Alfalfa? You wanted your hair. Buckwheat was a
never
little
bit. Never pull off the Buckwheat.
That's true. But I started watching this, and they had the director on. He must be like 180 now. I don't know. Looked like a... Remember Beetlejuice with the shrunken head at the end and the big suit? That's how this old man looked, man. And he was talking about the curse of the Little Rascals and all these things that went on behind the scenes. You would not believe, man. You would not believe. He said one day he was on the set, and he was filming. And he was going through the lineup, and he was panning with the camera, and he noticed his assistant was pulling on his arm, and he's like, what are you doing? You know, we're filming live here. And she goes, look, look. And you remember fat little Spanky, right? Little chubby kid?
Oh, yeah.
With the hat. I forget what you call those hats. But went all the way to the end when he panned with the camera, and there was Spanky holding his genitalia. I'm not kidding.
Spanking.
His Spanky was spanking. Yeah. Apparently, he was in the wrong line of entertainment. But no, here you got a kid. He was probably, what, 8? And he's holding his junk right there. Gave a whole new meaning to the Little Rascals. You know what I mean?
At least one of them.
Yeah, and I guess there was a big curse. I mean, remember Froggy? He used to go, I'm okay. He had that frog voice.
I worked long and hard to sound like Froggy, too.
So now you got that going for you. Alfalfa, and you want to be the frog kid. Well, that's good. Anyway, he was riding his bicycle, I guess, with a pal delivering newspapers, and a milk truck ran them both over and killed him instantly. Yeah. And I guess the big one that you wouldn't even imagine was Alfalfa. They had whatever cast of the Little Rascals was on still alive, and they were talking about on the set. I guess Alfalfa was a little horror. He would run around and he just horrified the people. I guess he would touch.
Oh, horrified! I thought you said a little
No, you can't say that. Anyway, horrified. Guess I should pronunciate, but. Yeah, he ran around. He'd grab the little girls' dresses and pull on them and pull them up and stuff like that. And the directors tried to, you know, correct him all the time. And I guess his folks, they said he was troubled. The way he came to be in the Little Rascals is his mom and dad brought him to the studio, Helmsley Studios or whatever. And I guess they couldn't get in. But at the very front was a little cafeteria where all the directors and stuff like that would come by. Maybe we need to check that out. And they put Alfalfa and his brother like up on a stool, and he started playing the guitar and singing and everything. And I guess one of the directors seen him and said, oh, we got to sign you. So they signed him right away, and they brought him in, and they didn't know much about him. But I guess he was troubled because his parents were drunks, and he had to support the family. So he was kind of like a man in a little body, and he was thrown in the mix with the rest of these kids. Anyway, they said him and Buckwheat, which was a young black child. Apparently he wasn't
American.
Yeah, apparently he wasn't too African American, right? And apparently he wasn't too fond of him, and he used to put firecrackers down his pants Yeah.
I think I saw that episode.
Yeah, but he really did in real life. And he said the parents would come to the studio to watch some live filming. And I guess Alfalfa did all kinds of stuff to him. Fireworks and like sawed off the end of the benches for it to fall down. Stuff that you would actually see in the movie, he did. And it hurt people, you know? He wouldn't go to school. They had to do 3 hours of school, I guess, a day on the set. And they were talking about how child actors are all washed up at like age 12 and stuff. Anyway.
And then they can't spell or do math because they only went to school for 3 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. And they don't get residuals. You believe that?
We know how that feels.
Yeah. Should have never signed that. Should have never signed that. Always read, folks. No, but I guess the dog. Remember the dog with the circle around his eye? What was his name? You remember?
Why do you do this to me, Sean? Always throw these things
Speck
on me. Speck
or Growler or Petey or something like that.
Petey.
Well, Petey was poisoned to death on the set and died.
Did anybody know where Alfalfa was at that time?
Alfalfa? All they seen was a hair sticking up, I guess. No. Nobody could prove that Alfalfa did it. But I guess when he grew up to be a man, he tried to do some stuff and try to be cute like he did when he was younger. It didn't work. Hollywood spit him out. And apparently he got into hunting, and he had lost the guy's dog, and a hunting dog, and he put out a reward for $50. Anyway, long story short, he felt cheated that he had to pay the guy's reward to get his dog back, went to get the money back, I guess, with a pocket knife, and that was it. The guy blasted him away. So that was the end of Alfalfa. And a lot of people, I guess, Spanky lived to be old. Passed out in his bedroom dead. So a lot of them made it to 80, but not all of them. I mean, a lot of them, like Darla, I guess she had a bad go, and it was like all of them had cancer. I just thought, wow, the little rascals, who would have thought, you know?
It's always the quiet, dangerous, firecracker-pulling monster of children that you should suspect.
We should.
In fact, if there's a child in the room, it's his fault. From now on, when I watch those murder mystery television shows, if there's a child anywhere within the sight of the place, it was obviously the child.
Absolutely. Kids are mean.
Dude, just leave. Ugh. You have children. Come on, admit it.
I have three.
Aren't they plotting to kill you?
They are, in my sleep. And sometimes
they're not that kind, Sean. They're not that kind.
They want to see my face. Ah, the kids. What are you going to do? Good kids. Anyway, that's the legend of the Little Rascals. I thought it was funny.
That's why we love legends here. We just love them, don't we?
We do. I found out another thing about it. Apparently there was a, in Mobile, Alabama, there's a whole community, and this has been in the news for the last couple years. There's a whole community that has, they believe there is a leprechaun that comes out at night in the tree. Have you heard about this?
I've not heard about the leprechaun in the tree in Alabama.
Yeah, in Mobile, Alabama, there's a whole, I think it's called Crichton Community. You guys can look it up online. And they think it's a leprechaun. The kids have seen it, everything. And they were down there interviewing the guy on news or interviewing the community. And there was a guy across the street. Older African-American man, and he came out and he was hollering to the news crew. He's like, don't be afraid. And they're saying, what are you talking about, dude? And he comes up to him and says, I have a flute because my great-grandfather was Irish. He said, my grandfather gave me, it's a leprechaun catching a leprechaun flute. It's for the purpose of catching one. And it looked like a
I always like when the title of an object is so descriptive.
Looked like a crack pipe that had some holes drilled in it. But they had pictures of him like dancing around in the park and blowing the flute and everything. They got a description of it. Somebody did a artist rendition of the thing, and it looked like, looked like just a sunshine maybe with a leprechaun hat on or a flying saucer or something. I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
So leprechauns don't you remember a couple years back in Argentina, they seen that gnome. Remember they had the video and supposedly alleged gnome.
So there was a gnome traveling around a lot at that time. We all saw him on television. Yeah. He was getting his picture taken everywhere.
Yeah, and of course Argentina has that real lenient drug law. Yeah. Maybe he traveled that way to See what he can score. I don't know. Demon Hunter, what do you say we go to the news?
If you smoke me, you'll see leprechauns.
Yes. And Lucky Charms. You'll never get my Lucky Charms. In the news! Yes, absolutely. News is always fun and exciting. Hey, guys! Strange news this week. G&D Show presses. It's always fresh. It's always exciting. A little strange and weird. And it starts right
now.
Oh, I like that. I do like it.
Well, all I can do is like wait for my chance to speak and jump on the mic and then turn myself off here so it doesn't ruin everything. So.
Right. Well, we're a little rushed tonight because we lost that 30 minutes, guys. But we will make that up to you. We promise. We promise. Or we kind of promise. Anyway, first up to bat tonight, G&D Show News. Generous Turtle Boy has gone through shell and back.
Huh? Hey, Sean, before we get going, let's remind people that this is Ghostman and Demon Hunter in the news. That means, folks, Sean and I pick these news stories, weird news stories, out of the paper, and then read them without... oh, man. See, I even messed that up. Have a drink, folks. This is where we get into this. Sean and I pull the news stories out of the paper without reading them in advance. We choose them only by the title, which means we're going to make a lot of mistakes. Every time we make a mistake, you take a drink. That's the G&D drinking game. We remind you that if you will be driving your car or are driving your car right now, listening to us on 102.7 The Hog or on your app at Action Audio Apps, don't play the G&D drinking game. Also, if you're planning to do anything important, like talk to a loved one this evening, listen responsibly.
Are you done? Are you finished?
I'm done. People must have taken 3 or 4 drinks just during that introduction.
That's it. Hey, Generous Turtle Boy has gone through shell and back. This is a heartwarming story, Demon Hunter. Comes out of our friends from the Huffington Post, the writer Andy Campbell. Thanks, Andy. We appreciate it. Gives us a lot of good stuff. Anyway, an 8-year-old Colombian boy got a new lease on life 3 years ago when his gigantic mole that accounted for 20% of his body weight was surgically removed, Demon Hunter.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Now, Didler Moltovo, drink up, guys, who was labeled Turtle Boy when the shell-like growth on his back made headlines. He's helping other kids affected by the rare condition. Demon Hunter.
How is he doing this, Sean?
I don't know. The Daily News reports on Montavo and his mother's. They appeared on Thursday on the ITV morning show. His mother, Lutz, said he felt very bad before the surgery. It impeded him from doing a lot of his activities he enjoyed doing. When he heard people calling him Turtle Boy, he felt very sad, and he would ask, why do I have this? It was a very difficult question to answer. We always had hoped that something would be done, but apparently they haven't been able to do anything yet. Doctors diagnosed him with in 2011 with congenital
Go ahead, Sean. Everybody wants to drink.
Melanosity. Drink up, guys. Nuvus, a rare mole condition. Worrying that the growth might become malignant, surgeons in the UK removed it. Motavo was speechless when he got to see his normally shaped torso. That's awesome. Not only is he a happy kid these days, but he's been traveling from his Columbia home to the UK to meet and cheer up other people affected. And that's what CNN had to say about that. Good job. Good job, man. That's great. That's a heartwarming story, Demon Hunter.
Has he been challenged to any races by Bunny Boy?
Oh.
Hey, Sean, it's that time in our show where we have to take a 2-second break. It doesn't affect you folks listening to us right now, but it's so that those of you listening to us on 102.7 The Hog can get those important commercials, and we'll be right back.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation. Listeners around the world, we are right in the middle of today's strange news. We just finished up the story on the Generous Turtle Boy. He's doing really well. We give you all the best, Turtle Boy. Keep helping. Keep trucking along, baby.
Hey, Sean, also in the news today, get this. Yeah. You know how you're always trying to find that perfect gift for your kids at Christmas time?
Not really.
You mean you've never gone hunting for a talking Elmo?
Maybe when they were little, but now they just say, I want, so I know exactly.
Money.
Yeah.
Hey, Sean, here's a new twist on Talking Elmo. Have a drink, folks. Live birds found in Elmo doll at U.S.-Mexican border.
Oh!
This comes from the Associated Press and ABC News. Federal agents inspecting a couple's baggage at the Arizona entry post at the U.S.-Mexican border found two live parrots.
Okay.
Inside an Elmo doll.
Oh.
The Customs and Border Protection said that they, the agricultural specialist found the birds on July 1st after cutting open the doll when an X-ray revealed something unusual about the contents.
Okay.
Seizing the birds, they were placed in quarantine and transferred to a Department of Agriculture holding facility, while the couple was fined $300.
Like them beans!
The border agency says birds entering the country are regularly regulated because they can carry viruses and bacterial diseases. Well, I have two things that I want to talk about with this, Sean.
Yes!
One, you, these parrots, don't they sell for like thousands of dollars each?
I think so. What was it, a macaw or something like that?
It doesn't say, but I just, I'm looking at this going, well, if the birds sell for a lot more than this, isn't it worth a $300 fine to try and sneak them in? And two, if they carry so many bacterial and viral diseases that we have to worry about it, why aren't there guys at the borders with guns shooting down birds when they try and cross the border?
I think PETA would have something to say about that, wouldn't they? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, folks at PETA. Don't send us your hate mail. We're just joking.
Don't cut us.
Don't cut us, man. Don't cut us.
I got you, man. All right, Demon Hunter, we are a little bit off. Would you like to go to our next segment?
I just wanted to point out one other thing, Sean. I'm not going to read this story, but I did want to mention it. You know my fear of sharks.
This is a good one. Yeah, you're scared to death of them. Goldfish.
I'm scared to death of sharks. They have come at me before, man, and I know they're just waiting for me. And I have proof because they're swimming all up and down the coast of New England. There were 12 spotted off of the coast just recently, and they're up 42%.
Oh, my God.
The great white sharks, their numbers are up 42% since 1997. So you can tell they're building numbers to come get me.
They're looking
for you. But now I have a new reason to be afraid of the ocean.
Okay.
You also know I love Florida.
Right, right. Disney World.
Well, now,
Orlando.
Just this week, ocean swimmers flee floating gator in Florida.
Okay.
An alligator floating in the Atlantic Ocean sent swimmers scrambling off the Omad by the Sea near Daytona Beach. Have a drink, folks. I'm sure I got it wrong. Aaron Smith of Tallahassee told the Daytona Beach News Journal she first thought it was a piece of carpet that was floating nearby her family, waiting in the ocean on Monday morning. Soon, a man further out on a sandboard let them know it was an alligator, and everybody headed for the beach. The lifeguards got everybody out of the water, and the gator vanished under the top of the waterline. Wildlife officials say alligators prefer fresh water, but can tolerate salt water for hours or even days.
Okay.
So the newspaper also said that two other alligators were sighted just down the beach on the Daytona Beach shoreline. So, Sean, ocean, bad. I'm never going near it again.
See?
I'll have those dreams tonight.
Last week, it was the mosquitoes, and this week, it's the sharks.
The alligators.
Alligators. How do you feel about... I was listening to that story the whole time. Hey, how do you feel about goldfish, you know?
Liar!
I think that they're carp, and carp are mean and nasty.
See? The ones with the big eyes. Yes. What's the name between the regular goldfish and the ones with the big eyes?
About $300.
There you go.
Liar!
Exactly. Demon Hunter!
Yes, sir.
Listeners around the world, our next segment.
Dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun-dun.
Wait.
Our next segment is a G&D original segment. That means Nathan and I came up with it, where each week we tour the United States for you guys to bring you the new legends, to find out if there's fact or myth. Well, I guess myth
legend.
Yeah, either way. From the Michigan Dogman, to the Lizard Man, to the Frog Man, to the Beast of Bray Road, this week's legend is... Helltown,
Ohio.
Oh, yeah, we got to put that in there. Ohio. Hey, man, this is a cool place. It's been popping up all over the internet lately.
So I've seen, especially on your website, yeah, Sean, which is why we chose this legend this week.
Well, yeah, I put it up because it's so close to home. Of course, I am out here in Indianapolis, Indiana, and you can get to Ohio in about, 2 hours from here. But apparently Helltown, Demon Hunter, is an abandoned town. It has a cemetery. This is where we're going to start. It has an old cemetery, and it says that if you go out there at night, of course, you can see ghosts. I mean, you can see one sitting on a bench. Apparently, them dancing in the trees. All kinds of ghost stories. Apparently, there's an old church. Of course, get ready for this one, guys. Satan worshippers. Yeah. With upside-down black crosses hanging in the church. Which, I'm thinking young vandals, perhaps. But the town's mostly, it's been abandoned. There's some people who live on the outskirts of it. All roads are closed there. And they warn adventure seekers to please not apply. Don't go out there. Of course, with the signs of graffiti and everything all over the place, I'm not thinking people listen too well.
Yeah, I think people have been casting those warnings aside, Sean.
Yeah. Well, they talk about monsters out there, Demon Hunter. Legends of from Bigfoot to reptilian creatures, aliens, and demons. Ghosts and goblins. You name it. Mostly ghosts and goblins.
Wait, reptilians? Are you saying that this is where the subterranean reptilian overlords have their secret base hidden underneath? I thought that was out in New Mexico.
That was Dulles. Dulles has nothing on Helltown. Who knows? There could be a... You know, layered underground base. Come on. Who was that? We had a Dr. David Jacobs.
Yes.
Yeah, he came on. The UFO regression therapist guys and professor at Temple University came on and talked about these underground bases and abduction and everything else. So who knows what drives this place. But they did talk that there was a cat that went out there from a paranormal group apparently investigating these legends. And he talked to some townspeople and talked to this old lady. She was like 190. She said she lived there a long time and never seen any ghost, never seen any hellhounds. That was another legend out there. Never seen any Sasquatch or anything like that. So I'm thinking, well, what do you think, Demon Hunter? Myth or fact?
Well, you know me and the thought of ghost town, Sean. I am a firm believer in that when the money dries up, the people move away. And when the people move away, the stories start.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I grew up on a 200-year-old farm. Were there some scary things that went on there? Yeah. But after I moved away and then moved back years later, I went down to the old farmhouse I grew up in. And there were pentagrams drawn on it and, you know, all sorts of scary things. And legends had started about this house that I grew up in. And it's like, you know, I lived there most of my life, guys. None of that's true. And they're like, no, it's true.
Maybe you're the Jersey Devil.
Apparently, my father had cut my head off and buried me in the backyard somewhere. And my ghost rose up on every full moon. I never knew that.
We need to get our resident crypto man in here, cryptozoologist Jim Snell.
Ooh, yeah, maybe he could check it out.
Yeah, he could check it out for us, go down there and do some field reporting. But I'm thinking if we go down, Demon Hunter, we'll just be sitting a lot in the car watching bunny rabbits and vacant homes.
Oh, you know, I do like one good witness before we actually go to a location to check it out.
I do, too. Anyway, guys, Hellstown. Be sure to check it out. Be careful if you check it out.
Don't check it out, folks. If you get arrested, don't tell them the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter sent you.
That's it. Demon Hunter, we got to go to break. But before that, tonight's guest.
Dun, dun, dun.
Tonight's guest, guys, writer for the hit series Star Trek Voyager, author, the fierce and unforgiving muse, Shrunken Heads, Bugs, and much, much more. Author, writer, Gregory L. Bugs stops by studio tonight. It's going to be a good one, Demon Hunter. How many times do you get to go inside the head of somebody who writes for an epic epic show like Star Trek Voyager?
Well, you know, what really got me was reading his bio and realizing that he wrote the trivia book on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes, he did.
That's important to me.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Buffy, man. Hey, tonight's band, Demon Hunter, Moonsville String Band. Special thanks to them. The name of the song, Return, guys. We'll be right back.
When you walk by the fountain, does your mind drift away? Do you stop to wonder, where am I? How am I these days? I never really cried over you. I pondered in sorrow, it's true.
Your favorite horror host on MeTV Indianapolis, Saturday nights at 10 p.m. And right now, you're joining me listening to Ghost Man and Demon Hunter. Where else?
Welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only, Mystifying Oracle of Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Tonight's guest, he's a writer for Sci-Fi Magazine. He's also worked on the hit series Star Trek Voyager. He's also the author of Bugs, Shrunken Heads, and much, much more. Please help us welcome Shadow Nation to studio, Mr. Gregory L. Norris. Greg, what's going on, buddy?
Just sitting here looking forward to speaking with you guys. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. Hey, thanks for coming on, man. It's hardly... We do, but I think this is the first person we've had that actually has written scripts. or written material for, you know, television shows like Star Trek Voyager. So thanks for letting us get in your head tonight.
Oh, well, it's a scary place, but if you want to play, let's do it.
Well, you know, Sean, you say that, but we did reality TV show, and according to everybody who watched us, we were scripted.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, absolutely. But, Greg, thanks for coming on tonight. You've done so much. You wrote the books Bugs, Ooh. Shrunken Ooh. Heads. And what's the latest one you've done that kind of talks about, or is kind of the way of Poe and people like that?
Do you mean TV or writing in general or
the
books?
Author,
or...
I'm sorry, the books you've authored, yeah.
Recently, let me see. I just started work on this big novella collection called Tales from the Robot Graveyard.
Yes.
And I have this thing. I mean, I love robots. I grew up, you know, with TV shows like Lost in Space that had the robot on it. So it's like one of those things that I'm always fascinated by. But what's really neat about this book is I get to touch upon human social issues with a canvas of robots. The cover has been done by Eric Chu, who was the conceptual artist on the new Battlestar Galactica. He redesigned the Cylons, the Galactica, the Cylon ships, and he did the cover for this book. And the other neat little bit of celebrity bling that goes on, you know, on the title of that particular collection is I got blurbed by Amy Howard Wilson, who was the woman who did the voice of Nova on the Star Blazers anime.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of a neat thing that I'm working on now. I just put to bed a collection. It was an anthology called Bugs, Tales That Creep, Slither, and Crawl. I have a story in that, but I also edited the collection, and that's a pretty scratchy volume, I gotta say. That's coming out at the end of the month. And today I put to bed a short story that's going out to one of my editors, and yeah, it's pretty kooky.
Now, I love the cover of Bugs. Who came up with that?
That is so cool.
Yeah, it is.
That is, the cover artist is also one of the authors. He does artwork as well. His name is MJ Preston. He's got a great story in that book. The artist who was on that, the actress, there, you know, the model on that cover, that happens to be his wife.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Greg, we're going to have to take a 2-second break in just a second so that our friends over at 102.7 The Hog can go to their break right now. But I just want to point out, Sean, that we are in dangerous, dangerous territory here.
We are.
Because you realize that we are now played on Action Audio Apps, which is downloaded by sports fans, and we're talking sci-fi. So we're in dangerous territory. But hey, Sean, let's take that quick 2-second break, and then we'll be right back. Okay.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation. This is your Mystifying Oracle Radio, and we are interviewing tonight Gregory L. Norris, author and writer. Greg, sorry about that break.
Hey, that's cool.
We were so off.
I wrote sports for 15 years for a magazine. I went to the X Games. I went to, my God, Fenway Park. You would not believe the amount of stories that I covered.
Fenway.
So maybe that might soften the blow a little.
See? I was going to say, Demon Hunter, about the sci-fi, you know, for a long time, I've been Indiana Pacers Colts blue, baby, through and through.
Yeah, so, I know. We every time the Colts go to the Super Bowl, we don't have a show.
Yeah, which would be very few. Yeah, don't wait on that, guys. But maybe this year, who knows? But anyway, we are talking to author and writer Gregory L. Norris. Greg, I was looking at the cover for The Fierce and the Unforgiving Muse, and I think mm-hmm. your description of that book was kind of like short stories with like Poe kind of feel to them.
A little bit of everything. One of the things that I love to do is to write horror stories and ghost stories, but I love it when I can do sort of like that gothic literary bent. And a lot of those stories that are in that massive book, I mean, that book weighs in, it's like 400 pages. I mean, I think it was 200,000 words, which is pretty significant.
Right.
I mean, you could kill a zombie with that book. That's how big it is.
And we're always looking for things that can kill zombies on this show.
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, it's a good weapon, or I hope a good read. But what I tried to do with that book was to do a greatest hits collection. You know, one story, you're in ancient Abydos in Egypt, and, you know, we're dealing with mummies. And the very next, you're dealing with a guy who just pulls all his possessions out of storage. only there was something in the storage bin that came back with them. So that's what I tried to accomplish with that book, is sort of a gothic literary, you know, greatest hits, if you will.
Sounds kind of like the Karen Black, the, what was that, the House of Terror? What was that? She had three stories with that little doll.
Trilogy of Terror with the African Zuni fetish doll, yeah.
Oh, yes. That one still leaves me a little worried. Like, that movie alongside with Don't Be Afraid of the Dark,
mm-hmm.
and the little troll, yep. in Cat's
the
Eye.
Little trolls, yeah, hiding in the flower vase. Hiding in the cellar, yeah.
Trolls, that, you know, I was raised Pennsylvania Deutsch. Trolls, still my only real fear. Put me in the woods with vampires, werewolves. They're all sparkly anyway. It doesn't matter. But
unicorns.
But, you know, no trolls, man. I can't take trolls.
Yeah, pretty creepy. There's actually a tribute to that particular trilogy of terror in my book. And it's a story called Grin, which is G-R-I-N-N, two N's. And it's a doll. It's a spooky doll story.
Ooh.
So I'm still terrified of that movie, you know, 40 years later.
See, I can't take dolls, Greg. I grew up in a home, and my mother, and I hated dolls, and this is probably why, in our old house in the dining room, she had all these dolls with those black eyes that would just stare into my bedroom. And
I can see it.
The moonlight would hit them in such a way. Of course, you know, I would collect horror masks and stuff like that and watch our late night horror host on Friday nights, and then I wouldn't sleep.
I find dolls frightening too. Anything with teeth.
Yeah. Well, the worst part of that is that, you know, my good buddy Sean here, who I think we're having a little bit of that audio feedback again. My good buddy Sean here hates dolls so much that for my birthday a few years back, sent me one as a gift.
Ooh. Idiot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was a haunted doll, Greg. I got off eBay.
It does. Not really. No.
Yeah, I said it was a haunted doll.
Well, I saw that you guys had Svengoolion last week. You have no idea. Just catapulted me into the stratosphere. We love him. We watch him every week here on MeTV.
Yeah.
We think he is pretty darn cool.
Svengoolie! Oh, yeah.
Svengoolie.
Yeah, Rich was awesome.
He's made me, you know, almost pee the bed a few times from laughing on a Saturday night.
You know, we was talking about that. He captures that old school feel from when we were growing up, Greg.
Yeah, it's like Creature Double Feature mixed with Benny Hill.
Yeah. Hey, is that what you tried to do with a lot of your books? Like, let's back up. When you were growing up, and clearly you grew up on scary movies and stuff. Is that what has inspired the man?
Well, one of the things, you know, that I absolutely love is a good creature double feature.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I grew up in Windham, New Hampshire, strange little town, tiny little house on a lake, surrounded by woods, wasn't a lot to do. So on every Saturday afternoon, as soon as, you know, the creature double feature came on, I was camped out in front of the TV with the rabbit ears. So I love that stuff. And, you know, and it does play into a lot of what I work on to this day. A lot of my stories are modern retellings of those classic stories, but with a little bit of a literary kick.
Right.
So, yeah, I love that stuff. Love it.
Well, you know,
let's hit on a little bit of the sci-fi here, Sean.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because being sci-fi fans and myself being a huge Star Trek fan,
I have one
big question for Greg.
Oh, go for it.
And that's, you know, writing a Star Trek Voyager episode, and you wrote no nude scenes in for Seven of Nine.
Got it.
All right, here's the Seven of Nine thing. Throughout the 7 years that Voyager was on air, for six of them, my very good friend, Laura Van Vliet, and I, we covered that show for the Sci-Fi Channel magazine and the various imprints that the Sci-Fi Channel had in different, you know, newsstand magazines. That's how I broke into writing for the show with Laura, because we knew the executive producer and the creator, Jerry Taylor. Now, we continued to pitch after we sold, and we continued to write articles for the national magazines after we sold. And the one person who never, ever on that show ever gave us an interview was Seven of Nine, Jeri Ryan. She was the only one. Everybody else, I still have all their phone numbers.
She won't take my phone number either. She won't take my calls, nothing.
But I guess she didn't do interviews. It was really funny in conversations with Kate Mulgrew. She said, "Have you spoken with Jerry yet?" And I said, "No, she doesn't do interviews." And Kate Mulgrew was, "Well, that's weird." You know, Mulgrew, by the way, was always and is always available. She is wonderful. She's a good lady.
Hey, get that name and number, Sean. We'll need to have her on the show.
Hey,
yes, no nude scenes for Seven of Nine, though we did give Janeway a romance in one of them.
Well, that was Janeway. I
mean, hey, Greg, how does one write for such an epic TV series like Star Trek Voyager? I mean, I guess it helps to have the connections in the field, but yeah. I mean, how did you get involved in that?
Well, here's an interesting thing. When you first start out, you get vetted into the pitching pool. Somebody, you know, believes enough in your writing to say, oh, okay, we'll take pitches from you. It's not often done in television. Paramount and the Star Trek franchise did that. It was a real rarity. And, you know, one day, got on the phone to speak with Jerry Taylor about, you know, something and said, by the way, I've got an excellent idea. I'd love to pitch it to you. She liked what we had already written in the magazine. She gave us a shot. I think we ended up pitching about 150 ideas, of which they took two. But what they do at the very beginning, when you get in, they give you this like the secret handshake, which is they give you the director's and writer's Bible, which has everything you need to know about Star Trek if you were coming in there and hadn't ever seen an episode or heard of it in your life.
Right.
And so you sit down with this like this incredible like encyclopedic thing, which I'm looking at as we speak, on one of the shelves in my office, and you run through it, and then what you try to do is create interesting stuff that hasn't been done before. You know, you take a character that maybe hasn't been on the canvas as much as others, and you try to do something interesting. The second story that we sold, which was the episode Gravity in the fifth season, initially was a Neelix episode, and then, of course, you know, in committee it gets changed and became a Tuvok episode. But that's how you start, is, you know, you go in there with a fresh idea. When you're doing it in person, you know, you pull your chair right up to the desk, you cross your legs, sit back confidently, and just you tell your story. And that's what we did.
Well, you know, I think I know why Paramount, you know, allowed pitching. Last year, Sean and I made friends with Jake Jacobson, who was a former bigwig in Paramount. And he said that one day somebody came into his office and pitched a show, and they said, it's about a bartender who is a former baseball player but lost everything because he was an alcoholic and now he owns a bar. And he said, who's going to watch that? And almost canceled the whole thing. So they're big on pitches.
sure, absolutely. Well, I've gotten really good at it. I can throw out a log line in 2 seconds, you know, and that's so important, is being able to boil it down so that your idea can be said in a sentence, just like you're reading the TV guide.
Well, here's a good chance for us to give people an idea here, Sean. If you're willing to do this with us, Greg.
Scotty, beat me up.
You know, Sean and I had to learn the art of log lines. And for everybody who doesn't know what a log line is, if you're making a pitch to a network or a producer or something like that, you basically do what's called an elevator pitch, and you have to find a way to tell them everything there is to know about the story. If you got in an elevator with them and we're going from the first floor to the second floor, how fast could you tell them the whole story?
Yes.
So, Greg, would you be willing to throw out a couple logline pitches to show people what they mean? Pick a show, tell us the logline, and then tell us what the show is.
One for us.
Absolutely. all right, here's one. A starship is lost in the Delta Quadrant. Boom, there's your Star Trek Voyager one. Uh-huh. Let's think about this. Okay, the last surviving battleship of a dying race tries to lead humanity across the universe to safety. There's Battlestar Galactica.
So that's the log line, and people try and get creative with them. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's really got to be simplistic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, for Counterpoint, which is one of the Voyager episodes, the log line was so simple, and yet it said everything. It was, Voyager acts as an underground railroad to save the persecuted people of a dying race. And they took that, and instantly, you know, Nick Sagan, who was Carl Sagan's son, that was who we pitched it to.
Oh.
Boom, he said, it's Anne Frank in outer space. Now, it's funny, we had said that, you know, between us, but never said that during the pitch, and then, you know, he said it, and I knew that they were going to hire us to do the episode. So, I mean, you know, once you have that sort of, like, the light goes off, you just really know.
You know, I guess I was always curious because Nathan and I had came together and we were talking, discussing about writing a book and everything, some short stories or kind of some of the stuff we've done by traveling around with the legends and things we've done over the, wow, I don't know, Demon Hunter, what, the last 10 years we've been doing it together.
Yeah.
And I don't know, and Nathan does. Nathan knows a lot more. So this is for me, Greg. I don't ever know where to jump in. So my hat goes off to you. I don't even know where to start. I'll start writing something, and my mind will wander, and I'll say, well, I don't have enough to do a story, you know?
Well, I bet you do. I mean, the thing to do is to put fingers to keyboard, pen to page, and just start, because whatever comes out, you can always edit it afterwards. You know, I spent today sitting here. I mean, it's like 4,000 degrees in the shade here. and I spent the day out on my sun porch with the fan going and wrote 20 pages of a short story and brought it to its conclusion and, you know, just dove in where it needed to start and got out when it was done. You know, your stories have to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. If you know the beginning and you know the end, it's just a matter of making the middle interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that whole middle part that I got a problem with. I'm real good on the start and finish. It's the kind
of... You're two-thirds of the way there, Sean.
There are two schools of thought with writing. You know, if you're writing fiction, there's pantsers, which write by the seat of their pants, and there's people who outline. And, you know, most of us end up doing a little bit of both all the time.
I usually have an outline, then throw it away and write by the seat of my pants.
There you go. Try whatever works. And whatever works is that's the right answer.
When you're writing those short stories for horror, like the Fierce and Unforgiving Muse book that you wrote, is that stuff from your childhood that you might have feared at one time or a movie you've seen? How does that work?
Oh, it's everything. It's you know, for instance, let me give you one. I was in New York City at a hotel, which I won't name, and the hotel, they were horrible. They were absolutely horrible. I was there to do a reading and, you know, finally got up to my room and finally got settled. There was no hot water. This is a 5-star, 4-star big hotel in New York City.
Oh.
And while I was in there, like trying to decompress before I went to do the reading, the maid was walking up and down the hallway and I could hear her. And she was doing this prayer in Spanish. And I thought, is this place haunted? Like, is there really someone out there? So I was watching her through the keyhole. Well, 10 seconds later, I'm sitting at the desk in my room that has no hot water. And I'm writing a whole story. That story is in Muse.
Oh, nice.
So really, it's everything. You know, it's wherever you go, there are ideas everywhere.
And she was your muse, Greg.
Strangely enough, in that instance, she was, I guess. You know, so yeah, that's the story that's called Veneer in there, by the way. So, I mean, there's stuff everywhere. You know, the whole world really is the writer's oyster.
Well, I have to throw this in here, Greg, because, you know, being a Buffy fan that I am.
Yeah.
The handbook of all things Sunnydale, the Q guide to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The Q guide to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Is that a Star Trek Next Generation throw in with Buffy there? Or?
No, actually, it's written. The Q part is for queer. It's really it's sort of an alternate lifestyle take on all the reasons to love Buffy.
Well, that makes sense considering you only can see Buffy now on, like, I think the Logo channel or something like that.
All Buffy all the time.
That was a great series.
But what made you an expert on Buffy?
Well, I wrote for several years for the Sci-Fi Channel's magazine, so I had a pretty, you know, decent understanding of the landscape. And this is in addition to having grown up on, you know, every good classic science fiction TV show there ever was. And when I was asked to write this book, you know, I got the joy of watching every episode again from start to finish. So I had like that whole fresh second take. So I guess that's the genesis why, is because I sort of have all this useless science fiction knowledge in my head and somebody decided to take advantage of it.
Now, how's it feel to be sitting on your couch watching Buffy or Star Trek Voyager and see the actors totally read your lines and stuff?
Let me tell you something. Here's an interesting aside on that. Last summer, we have this local New Hampshire, I mean, it's the whole state. It's a TV lifestyle show called Chronicle, New Hampshire Chronicle. They have one in Boston, which is really all of the rest of New England.
Yeah.
So one of the reporters read an article about me that was in a local newspaper. They came up here to film a segment on my career. We actually acted out a scene from Star Trek Voyager where I was Tuvok and he played Lieutenant Paris. It was incredible. And then it was broadcast on TV with me holding my ears up like a Vulcan. When Tom Paris says, "It looks like we fell into a gravity well," that was from a dream that I had the night before a pitch. That pitch was written, I mean, on the spot, on your way out the door, and it happened to be one that they absolutely loved. So let me tell you, that was really overwhelming. Now, another neat thing is, over the winter, I wrote a screenplay for a horror feature film called Brutal Colors. Oh. That movie wrapped in June and is now in, this week is the rough cut stage. I cannot wait. I mean, I absolutely cannot wait to see, you know, what that result is, because it's a real horrifying movie, and it's my first feature film.
Oh, wow.
I'm working on a second one now, but I guarantee I'm going to probably be jelly when I see that, you know, at the premiere.
Either that or you're going to be walking out saying, "They murdered it!"
Well, I have great faith in the director, and what's really neat is the guy who's doing the cutting. The editor, his name is Miklos Wright, and he works for Dick Wolf on all those Law and Order shows.
Right.
And he's done like 7 feature films, I mean, major ones with Kevin Costner in them. And he's the one who's cutting this film, and I just can't wait to see what he's done. I've heard what he's done is fantastic.
You know, we had Greg, author Max Brooks, son of Mel Brooks and author of World War Z, come on. And it was so cool, man. He came on and he was talking about World War Z and everything, and he said, "Don't ask me about the movie, guys," when we were in break. He said, "Because I'm going to be sitting there with you guys watching the thing, and if it's a huge turd," he goes, "I have nothing to do with that." And a lot of people said the book was a heck of a lot better than the movie.
Funny.
I was one of them.
Yes. And I hear that more and more. A lot of people, even with The Shining, I've heard people say, which, you know, is sacrilege. They said the book, which is amazing, Stephen King, the movie discredited the book. It was just, they said it was awful compared to, you know, what was there in the reading and, you know, the late night.
Well, both versions were amazing. They were, you know, enjoyable for what they both are.
Right. What do you think about that, though, with the screen adaptions? I mean, how much do they have to change? Why do they always have to change what the author puts into a book to, I guess, adapt it to a screen? I mean, I know the length and everything, but a lot of them change the filling.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that people don't understand, you know, in those two different, you know, media, is that when you're a writer and you're writing your novel, you're by yourself. You're doing that, you know, in your sun porch, you know, in your shorts and a ripped T-shirt. When you're writing, you know, for TV or film, it's writing by committee. There's always a committee, and every person, you know, there has a say in what happens. And that's why things change, you know. The episode Counterpoint started out as, it was called Dark Hiding. That was the title Laura and I created for that Voyager episode. Then when we got our contracts, it was being referred to as Refugee. By the time you saw it on TV, it was Counterpoint, and that's just the most minute of all facets to, you know, to television or film.
Well, you know, one thing Sean and I've learned over the years is the committee, because as we stood there in front of the committee directing us on camera as we filmed the comedy, and they said, "We love everything, just don't be funny." It's we learned about the committee right then and there.
Sure.
But hey, Greg, sure. before we have to wrap for the evening, because time has flown by so fast. Yeah. I wanted to make sure that we got out where people can find all your great work.
Oh, well, thank you. Just do a web search of my name. You'll go to, you know, different publishers, Amazon, Goodreads. I mean, I'm all over the place. I mean, I've got, you know, a total of maybe 4,000 published credits out there floating around in the world. So I'm very easy to find. I'm easy to find on Facebook. I'm easy to find on blog, where I maintain a writer's blog weekly. And my, like I said, my stuff is out there. It's very accessible. So that's the easiest thing to do, is just, you know, put my name in a search engine and you're good to go, or go to the bookstore.
So Star Trek, Buffy, horror, sci-fi, and as I'm going to say this, I don't know if I was allowed to, but I'm going to say this, Sci-Fi magazine before they added the Y's.
Oh, go ahead and say that. I love my favorite thing. Before those stupid Y's invaded.
The classic sci-fi.
the classic sci-fi, all things good sci-fi. Greg North, people can find you online. They can find your books. They can find all. They can watch your episodes. I want to thank you for coming on the G&D show tonight.
This was so delightful. I really, really had a blast, and I look forward to speaking with you guys again. This was really delightful.
Can you stay on the line while Sean and I wrap up, and we'll talk to you a little bit after the show?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, Sean, I hate to say it, but it's about that time.
Hey, it's time to pay some bills, buddy.
I've got my wallet out.
Hey, special thanks to tonight's guest, Gregory L. Norris. What a great guy. All Our Homes, 102.7 FM, The Hog, Stitcher Smart Radio, and, of course, Planet Paranormal, and our new Action Audio apps. Guys, be sure to check that out. Catch all the Ghostman Demon Hunter shows on there. Special thanks to Midnight Syndicate, FMA, and CreativeCommons.org. Thanks for the tunes. Oh, and special thanks to tonight's band, Moonsville String Band. Yeah, they were really good. Hey, from the haunted backroads of America, this has been another G&D exclusive interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
Night, guys.